Hello again, this is Adam Raven.
And I'm Greg Skillman.
And you're listening to
Whale Helmet.
Alright, today we're going to be talking about Trains That Never Come, which is a song that I recorded for the solo album, because it's all about me. The Badger Flies at Dawn came out a year and a half ago. Music by me, lyrics by the one and only Greg Skillman. Anything you want to say quickly before we play the tune so folks know what it is we're talking about?
No, I just think you need to sit back and be ready for 6 minutes of a really beautiful ride.
Right on. Trains That Never Come.
You always said the big one's on its way, and everything will be so good someday. Well, you just sit right there, just sit right there and wait. Said that the big one's on the track, and when it comes, there'll be no looking back. I watch you sit and wait, but I won't take that bait. I've got just what I have. That's what I'll play. I'm not gonna wait for trains that never come. Can't count on getting a lift, so I'll just help myself to one. And while the dust collects around your feet, I'll be dancing halfway down the street. My only fate. I've got just what I have, and that's what I'll play. I can't wait for trains that never come. Getting a ride, so I'll keep on keeping on. And while the dust collects around your feet, I'll be dancing halfway down the street. And while the dust collects around your feet, I'll be dancing halfway down the street.
Mm-hmm. Trains That Never Come.
They don't get
it. I was really happy with how this song came out. It was a little different for us in our collaborations to write something so sincere and almost, I dare say, conventional, save for the fact that it's, you know, 6 minutes long and still has a certain outer spacey kind of feel. It is a fairly normal song.
Yeah, we hit a stretch there where we started doing some pretty, dare I say, grown-up writing.
It's okay. We're allowed.
I remember the first time I wrote a short story that I thought was actually literature. I was just over the moon, and I felt like this song was like the equivalent of that. Like, we've done a lot of really great, interesting work, and you've done a lot of great work in the studio with Elephants of Scotland and other things, but something about the way this all came together, it was just, it's from top to bottom legitimate. You know, it sounds perfect. I think the words and the music match excellently. Your vocal performance is great.
Thanks.
Yeah. There's nothing about it that doesn't work for me. And I don't want to be the artist that's like that. I don't want to be the writer that says, well, yeah, everything I produce is fantastic. That's not true. And I know that not to be true.
It's very much not true.
But this damn thing's pretty damn good.
For a pair who have spent the last almost 30 years doing all kinds of weird, weird, off-the-wall stuff, songs that we've covered in previous weeks and in upcoming weeks, It really isn't a surprise that, no, actually, I should say it is a surprise that we would come together with something so normal, so relatable. I think it's something we've been moving toward. Maybe it is age. Maybe it's that we've exhausted the weirdness. Because there's definitely a few things we've done in recent years where we're starting to head in that direction of, oh, what if we actually had something to say? And now that we're at a certain age or in a certain place where we actually do have something to say, we probably don't need to apologize for being sincere.
Sincere, finally, yay!
Yeah.
Yeah, man, there's been a lot of instances throughout the history of us working together where one or the other of us has come up with a lyric that was a little more heartfelt, a little more sincere, but sometimes we were in groups or we were with other, you know, musicians where that just wasn't going to fly, you know?
Right.
So you kind of kept it to yourself and you kept it back a little bit. And like we talked about before, when I just gave you the stack of lyrics, I had stuff like that in there and I knew I could give them to you because it wasn't going to be, what is this crap? You know,
right.
It's like you could relate to the sincerity.
And I would read it for what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing in a scope beyond this that I'm shooting for. I'm just trying to get some right words together.
How long ago did you write this? Because I picked it out of the pile in, I want to say 2016, late 2016 or early 2017, I forget. It was literally the first, before I get into the history of writing the music, how long ago was it that you wrote this?
I started working on that shortly before Execute and Breathe came out.
Oh, okay.
I had a dream about trains. I just had its origin is very, very fuzzy, but I know that one day I was looking through my stuff and I had something called this, and apparently I had written it at some point. And I looked through it and I thought, this is really simple, but I like how it's all coming together.
Well, what was it? What was it like a few years ago when you wrote it? I mean, do you remember why you wrote it or what sparked it?
I really don't. I think it was the dream I had. And just the idea of somebody standing there waiting for a train that's not ever going to get here. And I was like, well, at some point you have to leave. You have to start going.
At some point it's on you. It's on you for, I mean, yeah, it's the train's fault for not coming, but at some point it's on you for sticking around.
Yeah. And I was in a bad relationship with an employer at the time. Mm. So I was also kind of giving myself inspiration to move on. And that happened. That did happen. But I saw how it applied to so many other things, and that's what made me confident in the lyric. And I want to go back to something you said earlier about how this is one of our more normal songs. I know exactly what you mean by that, but if you break down your instrumentation on how that thing is created, it's extremely unorthodox.
It is. Instrumentally and harmonically, it's a very weird song.
But it's disguised as something that anybody could listen to. And that's...
Yes. Yeah. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the music theory behind the song, but I will hint that the first chord is F sharp, and then the second chord, the first chord is F sharp to minor to D. So they kind of go back and forth. The next chord is C major to A minor, and then up to F natural to D natural minor. So it goes from F sharp to C to F natural, and then up to B natural. So there's these weird, like, the key changes are in flat fifths.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So there's these chords that should not go together, but do. And it's those, when you find those, when you play the wrong chord and it sounds cool, that's the moment that is like, ooh, I think I got something here.
Wow. So nice.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I do, is like I dick around on the piano or on the guitar doing the obvious thing, and then every once in a while the wrong thing or the unexpected will happen. And that's the one that's usually, knowing me, the one that I run with.
And that's the kind of thing that turns what would ordinarily be some kind of bizarre experiment into an extremely listenable piece of music.
It's those surprises. That's what makes a song work so often. It's not the only thing. It's not a rule. It's not a hard and fast rule. But like a good joke or a really catchy song, it's the unexpected that grabs you. If you have a series of expected changes and obvious movements, you could miss the whole thing. The whole thing could just like flow right through you and it would be forgettable. And, you know, that's like my biggest fear, is to write something forgettable.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that it was interesting the way it came up is you wrote it in, I guess, like 2014, 2013, 14, leading up to Execute and Breathe. And that album is kind of when some of the tensions within the band started to appear. And then we did The Perfect Map, which was the next album. And by the time we got done with that, there were, you know, the problems didn't go away. They just kept coming back worse and worse. And then that lyric jumped out at me because I suddenly related to it so clearly. It's like, if, you know, the path that Dan was on was not one that I could go on. And I don't mind mentioning him because I've talked to him about it since then. We've made up, we're good pals now. And we both kind of acknowledged the situation we were in and what needed to happen and why mm-hmm. it happened. So it's actually really cool, speaking of being a grown-up. And then I brought the song to the band, this time now with Bob on bass and then Ornan on drums still and John on guitar. And we played it a few times for a few weeks, as I've mentioned, and it wasn't clicking, which was kind of heartbreaking because I knew the song had some great potential. And we played it as a band at practice for like 3 or 4 weeks. And every time I listened back, I was like, well, that is us playing it, but it's not the heart that I felt in the song was missing. Yeah. So,
yeah.
So where was I going with that is, you know, so we kind of put it to the side, and then Ornan was uninvited from the band. And I realized, okay, well, I've got this song and a handful of other ones. I want to keep working on it because I knew it was a good song. And I was like, maybe I work on it with Lefty and Bob. And by that point, I was so fed up with bands, so fed up with working with other people. And I just like, I'm just taking this and I'm doing it myself.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was going with all this is that it goes back to the point I made last time or the time before of compromise versus synergy. If you have an idea, you can bring it to a group of other people, and one of two things will happen. Bringing it to these other people will either make the idea bigger and better, you'll find a synergy, or you will compromise. This idea that you had will only get whittled away at by these other people having their own different visions for where it should go.
Yeah, and that's the reason your favorite artists take 2 years off of the band and go do a solo album.
It's totally why people, I get it now. I totally get it. Having been in a group and then done my own thing, I was like, yeah, I couldn't have done this with the band. I couldn't have done Sending Me Feathers with the band. You know, there are a few songs on The Badger Flies at Dawn that were intended to be on the next Elephants of Scotland album, and I thought could have worked. The title track, for example. But ultimately, it was like there was just too, I was just losing too much of what I wanted these songs to be. And I had to kind of go back to myself and just do it all myself. And I was like, okay, now I haven't compromised anything. And I don't think I was missing out on all that much synergy. I listened back in preparation for this episode. I listened back to some of the rehearsal recordings of Trains That Never Come with the band. And it was really interesting just how wrong it was. It was good. Like, everyone is a great player. And everyone sounded really nice on their instrument, but the song was no longer there.
Yeah, I could get that. I wasn't at any of those rehearsals, obviously, and I never heard the excuse me, any of the demos. But I definitely had bands where I'd bring in a tune, and after a couple of rehearsals, it's like, nah, we should revisit this later. It's not sounding like what I had in mind at all. And it's okay to feel that way. That's the artist privilege, I guess. You can choose to throw your stuff out there and say, "All right, you know, go ahead and put your mess on it. Let's see what it comes, what we get out of it." You know, but
well, what I find makes the difference between those two kinds of songs is kind of something that we hit on a few minutes back, which is songs that are more personal. Like, I think about the great songs that we did in Elephants of Scotland. Your Amber Waves or A Different Machine or, you know, this one, that one, and the other one. And it's usually songs where the lyrics are not as close to the heart, if I will, and more, you know, they're more metaphorical, allegorical, or just about a broad, impersonal subject. Like A Different Machine is a great example because it's a great tune. Dan wrote the title. I came up with the verses. You wrote the choruses and something like that. And it was just about, you know, it's about technology taking over our lives and was more of a sociological commentary. And those, go ahead.
I was going to say, and a great, like, first three-way collaboration between us because there were no stakes. We were just talking about an external, impersonal subject, and we all had our different ways of viewing that.
But we could bounce ideas around about this without anyone getting too personal or protective. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, so if I'm like writing a song about like the love of my life or how I need to move on from a certain situation that involves the people I'm collaborating with, then it's going to get touchy and dicey. And I can see why some bands have real trouble when the singer or the songwriter, I should say, you know, writes such personal, you know, vulnerable lyrics.
Yeah, and Elephants of Scotland was a true band. Everybody contributed to every song. There might have been some direction from the main writers, but, you know, you got to do it your way, you know, for in service to the song. If you bring in a song like that to the band, you're asking them to be hired players. You're saying...
It's true. Yeah, yeah.
So you got to play it this way, and you got to play it this way, because I'm hearing it this way. And that was always a downfall in every band I was in. And I was guilty of it.
Yeah,
Others were guilty of it. You know,
it's not the point of being in a band. It's a disservice to the band and the spirit of that. When I was in Mailbox, you know, when we were a live band, you know, between periods of it just being a bedroom project, when it was me and three other people, I ran into that, a few times. I was like, okay, play this, play this, play this, play this. And looking back, my favorite moments were when I let my bandmates run free with a song, or to be more specific, had a song that my bandmates could be more free to run around with on their own.
Yeah, if you're going to bring a piece of work into a project, you have to give everybody in the band handrails to hold to figure out how to get through this piece of music. And if you judge that those handrails are so close to where you're standing, you probably shouldn't give them that particular song.
Interesting. Did you, can you think of like times where you've had that? I mean, you said you did, but I mean, like specific examples of dealing with that or even with me?
No, not with you. Not with you. Let's see. One of the first bands I was in was One-Eyed Love Child.
Of course.
And we were a garage rock band out of Boca Raton, Florida.
My old stomping ground.
Yeah, we were getting the cops called on us over there. It's something off of Butts Road, I think. Some development. Yeah. And we had kind of realized that we were sort of a garage-ish punk band with maybe a little something, but nothing, I don't know.
Yeah.
We were happy with ourselves. And we were doing stuff that you didn't just go three chords and go, okay, we're done. We explored some different arrangements and stuff, but... I remember bringing in something that was a little closer. I suffered a breakup and I wrote a song about it and I brought it in. And when I saw the drummer's look on his face when he was reading the lyrics, I was like, this is not the right place for this song.
Read the room, Greg. Yeah. So when your lyric, oh, right. So getting back to the point I was, you know, arriving at all that time ago. When I was plucking out that tune, I had like the music for Trains That Never Come First, and that lyric showed up in the pile and I was reading it. I was like, oh my God, this is what I'm dealing with. And at first when I read the lyric, I thought, okay, this is me talking to one or two of my bandmates or former bandmates. You know, I was like, we're not going to be stars. I just want to have fun. I just want to go over this way. I just want to dance halfway down the street, you know, just grooving, just having fun with it and not be waiting for the big train, waiting for the big moment to come when we arise to some next level. And as time went on, I realized it was really two sides of myself. Part of me was like, yeah, but we got to make this work. And that's the train I might have been waiting for. And the part of me that's dancing halfway down the street was the kid that you met all those years ago and that I've keep trying to get back to. And I found it again after being away from the band for a year or so, making this album. I realized, oh, just have fun making music. The more you think about how it's going to be received or how you're going to promote it or sell it, the further you get from... You don't want to go where that train's headed.
I was trying to figure out how to say it earlier. You and your bandmates were waiting for different trains to not come.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting dynamic about bands also that I learned. And this is a good thing. It's not a criticism of bands. It's a great thing is that everybody is there for a different reason. You know, you got four people in a room in a band. They're all there for... the music of the band. That's like the one reason they're there. But in the Venn diagram of these four people, that's pretty much where they overlap with maybe a few other spots. But really, everyone got to that practice room, to that recording studio differently. We all took different routes to get there. And we're there for different reasons, and we want to go different places. So... I'm grateful for those however many years where we were at the same place at the same time and the lightning was in the bottle and, you know, it was electric. And, you know, paths diverge if I can beat this metaphor to death a little more.
Well, it was just time, you know, it's run its course, you know, I'm privy to all the things that went down, and when relationships change, it's best to just find your own safe place to work with. And that's what the Badger's all about. The Badger's was your safe place getting you back into, you know, just feeling good about playing music again.
Yeah, I hope that came through on the recording, is that as melancholy as the song is, whenever I listen back to it now, like I feel joy listening back to it, even though it's a sad-ish melancholy, I think melancholy is the right word, song. Wow. I do feel joy because as the person who recorded it, when I listen back to my old albums, whether they're my albums or with the band, 50% I'm listening to the music. 50% I'm recalling where I was at the moment recording that album. And it's really difficult. And a lot of people have that for other people's music. It's like, oh, I love this song. Not in part because it's a good song, but in part because it reminds me of where I was when I was listening to it. And that same thing even more so happens for the recording artists themselves. Is I love this song, but I also remember, I feel that mellow, that groovy place I was in at the time.
Yeah, you created your own external reset device by creating this song. You put all of that you needed into this song. Now you can press play, and it fixes that problem again.
That's your this is my full power. You wrote full power to summon the love, that special person that you wanted in your life. And I think I may have gravitated toward the song because I knew it was the mantra that I needed at that time in my life.
Yeah, mantra. And it's interesting that you use the word melancholy. I would never have put that word to that set of lyrics.
My understanding of melancholy is kind of, it's kind of almost synonymous with bittersweet in that it's sad, but in a way that needs to happen to reach the happy.
So you are focused on the separation of yourself from the person who's having the dust collecting around their feet.
Well, when I'm both people, it's tough to differentiate the two. I mean, the two fates are intertwined. As much as they are separating in the nature of the lyrics, one's dancing down the street, one's waiting at the station, the distance between those two people becomes the active element.
Okay, so that's how you have it worked out, is you are both people. Both people are a metaphor for the paths you normally go down, and you got to pick the one that's dancing more often.
Right. That's one aspect of the song. I mean, I can't just say that's what that song means to me. There's so many, every time I listen to it, I'm picking up a different angle that I could interpret the song to mean.
To me, there's a power in it. There's a breaking free of the thing, exactly like what you were talking about. Yeah, different bad relationships that were going bad, and you looked back at all the times that were fun, all the times that were cool, the accomplishments, the concerts, you know, all the great stuff, and now all of that's stopping. Mm. And there's a power to saying, "And I'm stopping it."
Nice. Yeah.
And I'm the one that's moving on, and I'm not the one that's gonna keep listening to this crap and putting myself through another, you know, weird session of your delusions, you know.
I have nothing to add to that sentence. Yeah. And that is where, like I said, as much as I say it's about two sides, I see the song as being about two sides of myself. It is about me and another person as well. There are so many times, not just the band thing, not just the ones that I've mentioned, but many other points in my life where it could be a friendship. It could just be a situation. It could be a job. It could be a city that you're living in where it's like, you can just stay here being this thing that you are and you think it's going somewhere that it's not. I need to go off and dance. And I need to find the happiness now. I want to bring something up, and you don't have to, we can cut this out if you don't want to get into it, is someone you know brought this up as the song that they connected. A close friend of yours connected with this song at a time when they needed it.
Yeah, I'm sure she wouldn't mind me talking about it. June 11th, 2017, I went to a Iron Maiden concert with my really good friend, Scott Martin. We had been doing technology work and some music collaboration and just generally being great buds for many years, like since about 2000 or so when we met. And we were heading up to Tampa to see Iron Maiden, and he wasn't a big Iron Maiden fan, but we went. And we just talked the whole time, and he was telling me these great stories about finally reconnecting with his estranged daughter. The New Jersey court systems kept them apart and so forth. And he hadn't actually seen her yet. Like, they'd done some FaceTime, but they were making plans to get together. And we started heading home, and long story short, he had a heart attack, and they couldn't resuscitate him at the hospital. And I had to drive home a man down.
Yeah.
It was a real rough time. And his wife, Stephanie, I felt infinitely sad for and still do. She still struggles with it. Yeah. Always will. It's very traumatic. But we were hanging out one night, getting pretty real, talking about stuff. And she said that she really connected with this song as a propellant for her to continue on.
You mentioned that she had related to it, and I wasn't sure how, because it felt like, boy, that's, it felt like a place that, like you said, was something, an aspirational song. Like, it's somewhere she wanted to head toward. I guess maybe it was the grief that was at the station. It was the suffering that was at the station.
Yeah, I've heard from a lot of people who have grieved like that, that one of the first instincts is to build a shrine of some sort. So you have a visual representation every day of your missing loved one. And everybody eventually says, I couldn't do it anymore. It was driving me crazy. You know, I have to move on from that. And there is an element of that in this song. I mean, not from my perspective, but it could be applied to that where, I got to get moving. I have to, you're not here anymore, and I'll miss you every day, but I've got another 20, 30 years left. I got to make a matter. I got to help people. I got to do what I was put here to do.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we're going to have too much to add to this. This was a really good chat. So let's just leave it there. I don't know what we would close the, you know, I like to make sure we have a closing song. I have no idea what to close the song, close the episode with.
I had another train song back in the day. Did you ever do that one?
Which one?
I think it was called My Train Song. This is My Train Song.
Tell you what, let's go out with you doing an a cappella version of My Train Song. This is Greg Skillman, My Train Song.
This is my train song. Foodly doodly doo. This is my train song. Woo, woo. Thank you.
You've been listening to Whale Helmet. You know, go to imadeitup.com for more about this show and links to the album. I've been Adam Rabin.
I've been Greg Skillman.
We'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.